Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here comes the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joe Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh, hell yeah.
You're about to get all what up, Big Down? Hey!
How we doing?
You interrupting Spence? Like, what's that?
I don't know when he's done!
He's Blank, I'm Branham.
And the B Brothers has already hit the floor.
The assistant to the regional manager behind the glass. I am happy that we do have... Oh, it did fall.
I was going to say, we got a poster and it fell, and it's pretty awesome.
I'm happy. That's symbolic. I'm happy that we do have a poster because it means that we won't be fired for now.
Right.
Like... We might get traded at the deadline. Maybe they axe us in July, but I think we're safe through at least June. Because, you know, it's like Altuve hanging outside of Minute Maid Park. It's like Yordan or Verlander. Like, they put the posters of the franchise players. When I left the show yesterday, I thought we were getting fired because we didn't have posters.
Well, and then, right when I looked, someone said, hey, look. And I looked when I got home. And Brad Kellner had one, too, and I'm like, oh, yeah. These numbers are not adding up in our favor.
Yeah, so I'm happy that we have a poster, even though it's on the ground. Jake and Cody? I don't know. There's no poster
yet.
With
the bees, you get the stinger.
There's no poster yet. You know, you put posters on the pillars of your building. Those are your franchise players.
I could have been Granato with a little whack job.
I thought we were the measly midday guys, but we do indeed have a poster. That's good. It's good for our financial future. It's good for our job security, at least through June. We might be a July casualty.
You know what we could have done?
When's the quarter end up? I'm not good with business. When do quarters end up? Like, it's not the real calendar year. It's like, when's the second quarter end? I think it's July, maybe.
Yeah, because February isn't one starting or ending in February. February is one of the breakpoints.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, I think so. Because then, like, you do, like, your quarterly tax estimations, like, in April? I don't know. I have
April
no idea.
Is a good month.
April?
Yeah.
Who says April?
I thought you just did.
I think I stopped. But, I don't think
Joseph,
did I say April?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, my bad. We might be a Q3 casualty, but we're safe through at least Q2, I think.
I think you're right.
I think.
Joe,
Jake
I got
Cody?
An idea.
I don't know.
Tell Frank the movie poster has got to be Tommy Boy for Jake and Cody. Just take care of it right now. Spade and Farley.
That's not bad.
That's pretty good.
There it is.
That's
favorite
pretty good.
And guess what? Favorite team?
I mean,
Yankees.
If they're still here. Like, again, if you have a poster, I think you're safe through June. If you don't have a poster... I'll just leave it at that. All right. Astros won baseball yesterday. They won a baseball game. A lot to get to here. Like, I don't even know where to start with where I want to get to. Like, I don't want to have the BLAC conversation yet. I think I want to save that to whenever Paul doesn't go late and get us a late start into our show.
Ouch.
How about Bregman? Let's start with Bregman.
Okay.
Because Joe was talking about Bregman yesterday and how he's kind of turned the corner a little bit, starting to look good. He hit the home run yesterday. That was a Crawford box special. That was the only ballpark that would have been a homer. But hey, credit. Taking care of, you're playing the field that you're given. Alex Bregman is a new player, like in the cleanup spot. We talked about this yesterday. I looked at the numbers a little bit. You took a little bit of a deep dive, a little Alex Bregman deep dive. Last 20 games, Blankers, he was hitting 195 on May 7th. He was under the Mendoza line. It was terrible. Bregman's offense was as bad as Bregman bomb salsa. His last 20 games... he's hitting .313. His OPS, .844, which, you know, that's good. It's not, you know, 1,000. It's not what he was doing in his MVP years or close to MVP years. But I'll take this Alex Bregman from the last 20 games. This Alex Bregman wins you a lot of ball games for an offense that's below average in Major League Baseball. This is the Alex Bregman the Astros need and the city needs at large.
No, and the thing is, you know, when I had said it to you guys – I brought it up yesterday, but when I said it to you guys a week or so ago, even when he wasn't getting, you know, hits per se, it was a different at bat. It was back to him having a good command of the strike zone. It was good to see him not dipping his shoulder and popping everything up, and it seemed like everything was starting to fall into place. Now you're almost convinced of it. And then, like I said, when you stick him between Tucker and Yordan, it just seems like kind of like we were talking about yesterday about how certain guys feel comfortable in certain spots. But it just feels he kind of feels like, you know, I was saying how certain players, they can't get rid of that mentality. And as it related to Bregman, he wants to get back to those power numbers, like the one big year that he had when he was top five MVP voting and everybody said, whoa. But at the same time, you put him between those two guys and it kind of boosts his ego to where it seems like he's got a different attitude and approach and a little more swagger to him. He did the point at the camera last night. He kind of got back to old Breggy things. This team is never going to tell him to stop doing that. Sometimes they need some of that, more of that in their lives. And it was fun to see. And I think he's real comfortable right now between Tucker and Yordan.
Yeah, he's always been good in the cleanup spot. Mm-hmm. So it's not unique to only this lineup. But you're right. Like, he is comfortable there for whatever reason. And prototypical, you kind of want a little bit more power from your cleanup spot. But you can live with it whenever you're getting power up top with Altuve. You're getting power from Yordan Alvarez. Real quick, guess who's second on the Astros in home runs?
Bregman?
It surprised me when I saw this. Nope.
Yordan's
obviously the leader.
Yeah.
Who's second? I saw this yesterday.
Pena?
Jeremy Pena is the second.
Because 2 days ago they ran the graphic that he led American League shortstops or was second in home runs.
He has 8. I think Bregman has 7. I think Tucker has 7. Okay. So you're looking at, like, you get power from the top of this lineup to where you can kind of get away a little bit from the prototypical, your best power hitter must hit cleanup. They're committed to Yordan third. Tucker, he doesn't want to use lefties back-to-back. You can get away with what you're doing. And I think that you kind of need to figure out now as we've turned Memorial Day, and we're now looking ahead to summer of the bees, by the way, hot bee summer. You need to figure out what your lineup's going to be. And not that you're close to the stretch drive, but you want to get into a bit of a rhythm. Like, once the summer's comes around, this is whenever people talk about, this is when you want to get hot. This is when you're supposed to be at your best. This is when everything's supposed to start clicking. And you're starting to see a little bit of the Astros clicking a bit. You get power up top with Altuve Pena. Obviously, you get it from Yordan. You can live with Bregman being Dustin Pedroia in the cleanup spot. And he's been really good the last 20 days. I think that the offense is trending up. And the Astros again showed yesterday, for whatever reason, they hit good pitching. Like, it's the journeyman. It's the single A types that give them trouble. Whenever you get a good pitcher on the mound, the Astros fare better against good pitching than random Major League Baseball team A, B, or C. Like, they hit good pitching for whatever reason.
It came up yesterday where we were talking about the fact that on paper, that game looked like it should be the Twins heavily favored to get the W because of the pitching matchup alone. But sometimes some teams need that external motivation, and sometimes they get complacent just being the same old successful Astros. But they seem to step up every single time there's an extra challenge in their way. And again, yesterday and last night, they proved to you why teams should be fearful of that and why bettors should be careful about that. Because no matter how much it looks like it's tilted in the opponent's favor as a team or in a pitching matchup, they step up when they need to step up and they show the world, hey, look, cute that this guy was having a good year. Well, sorry you had to meet us, but we'll take care of that.
Yeah. So Bregman's finding a good little offensive 20 days here. Hope he can continue that. It's good for this offense. Phil Maton. Somebody slid into my DMs yesterday and asked me, is Phil Maton an all-star? Which is kind of a weird thing to slide into my DMs and ask me if Phil Maton's an all-star. He might be, man. Like, he's got a
0.75
ERA. This dude is outstanding. I'm old enough to remember when people wanted to DFA Phil Maton and Mauricio Dubon. I'm old enough to remember when people didn't want to salary arbitration offer Phil Maton and Mauricio Dubon. And Mauricio Dubon kind of, you know, was the bridge that got you to Altuve, has turned himself into a super utility guy that you can trust off the bench, which I think this team sorely needed in the offseason because Dubon was not that guy yet. He has transformed into being that guy. And Phil Maton has been your best reliever. He's been unbelievable. He's been great. And when Montero's kind of been slipping, although he has been pitching better, I think it's 6 of his last 7 outings where he's not given up a run. Whenever Montero's not pitching to Montero standards last year, Abreu's had a couple of outings these last two where he hasn't been pitching to his standard. Ryan Pressly, the most recent time out, turned into Ryan Stressly. Phil Maton's been your best reliever, and nobody saw this coming.
No, and I'll be the first to admit it. I mean, start of the year, I was that guy. I mean, I questioned Dubon being a member of this team, and I questioned whether Phil Maton had a place in this bullpen. And I did it because of the way that they finished the year last season. It was a running joke that in Dubon's case, he was the personal center fielder of Justin Verlander, but offensively, you know, it was tough to expect anything at all from him. And from a Maton perspective, I mean, he got mad because his brother got a hit and he knew he wasn't going to make the playoff roster. And he took it out on his own hand while punching a wall in a locker. And I thought, you know what, the ups, the downs, I just don't know where he has a place with as good as the rest of the bullpen has been. And now you turn the calendar, you know, forward a few months and you look at it and say, well, I was wrong because I never thought Mauricio Dubon was going to fill in for Jose Altuve and hit 300. Right. I never thought that Phil Maton was going to have a sub-1 ERA and do the things that I thought were kind of in his past or maybe that he'd never achieve aside from being a part of a, you know, an immaculate inning or a combined no-hitter. He looks great.
Yeah, see, I don't know if you were saying not to offer them arbitration. I don't remember if you
were
saying that.
No, it wasn't that I wasn't saying to offer my I just wondered where their place was going to be on this ball club.
Look, I didn't think that Phil Maton was going to turn into a potential all-star. Like, anybody would be naive to think that he was going to be. Like, no one was making that proclamation. So Phil Maton has pitched to a level that not many people thought he was capable of pitching to. The DFA stuff, the don't offer him arbitration stuff was silly. Like, Phil Maton's been a solid Major League Baseball reliever for his entire career. Now, he hasn't been this. Mauricio Dubon has always had a place on a Major League Baseball roster because of position flexibility, plays good defense, puts the bat on the ball. He never hit for a ton, like a great average, but he's good at touching the baseball with his baseball bat, which, you know, Yuli Gurriel did that last year as well. But both of those guys have transformed into being weapons for this team. Maton with what he can do, bridging it to the back of the bullpen, and Dubon, what he can do, just filling in for a bunch of different dudes. The one last thing before we talk in our next segment about Belak and really J.P. France, too. I love it when Chaz McCormick hits home runs to the left side. I love when he hits pull home runs because McCormick, like 80% of his home runs are the opposite way. His swings is kind of like, you know, caters to that, where he kind of attacks it and pushes it the other way. When Chaz McCormick is pulling home runs, I feel like Chaz McCormick's about to get hot.
Well, I'll tell you what, but if you think about it, he's been hot all year. Until he got hurt, he really caught fire. He was really playing well. And though it opened the door for Jake, I mean, the fact is it seems like he's a different hitter this season. And you're right, he's not taking everything to right. And normally he's got that stance that lends itself towards waiting, you know, letting the pitch get a little deeper on you and then pushing it to the right side and trying to hit the right center field gap. But boy, that was a no-doubter last night. I mean, when he made contact, he basically looked at the dugout and dropped the bat like, I know that's gone. And that's a great sign for a team that's still trying to figure out in platoon left field. He has a place in this lineup, whether it's center or left, when he keeps doing those things, because defensively, he got a great jump on a ball in left center last night again, and he plays a good, solid defensive outfield for you.
Callis mentioned yesterday during the broadcast, I don't know if y'all caught this, that I haven't noticed this kind of like, you know, technically. I've noticed that there's been a little bit of a rotation, but I haven't noticed that it's been like that finite, is that he says that he's using kind of a three-man rotation for two outfield positions between Jolks, Chaz, and Jake.
Yep.
Do you think Jolks belongs in that conversation to be part of a three-man rotation for two outfield spots on a daily basis?
I think it's going to get to the point where he's probably going to get squeezed out. But I think that he started the season better than I think a lot of people would have expected. I think a lot of people thought he'd be sent down rather quickly, and that's why we even talked about the fact that you weren't going to start the clock on somebody when you thought that Brantley would be back after the first month of the season. But he kind of, I mean, he did enough to earn a spot to stick around, and he showed signs that he's a guy that belongs. But I think that the way the other two guys are playing, I think you're going to be hard-pressed in another 15, 20 days to probably see a whole lot of playing time for him, and he's probably better suited for Sugarland to get ABs because those two other guys have been playing really well.
I think he's a good backup outfielder. Like, I think he's certainly capable of being a backup outfielder in the Major League Baseball level for this team with no Michael Brantley. I would rather see all those at-bats, for the most part. You got to give them days off, but for the most part, I'd rather see Jake and Chaz get most of those at-bats as opposed to being one-third of a three-man rotation. Yeah.
Okay. I think, you know, you had 17 games in 17 days. I think that during the stretch...
Yeah, maybe after that time.
Yeah, Dusty's going to be cool probably... He's probably going to be a guy that's going to be very cognizant of that during the 17 games, and that's probably why he's going with that deep of a rotation. Mm-hmm. But I think he'll tighten it up by the end of June.
I'm cool with that. I'm cool after this little stretch, and then you get some off days in there. All right, 713-780-ESPN. You can get in on some of those conversations. Bregman hot. Is it here to stay? Phil Maton and All-Star. Corey Jolks belong in the same rotation, outfield rotation conversation as Jake and Chaz. 713-780-3776. HRMP listener line. We're on Twitch. Twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Also, the Astros, this sounds crazy. What I'm about to say sounds crazy. Don't run me out of Houston. The Astros have improved with Belak and France after the injuries of Garcia and Urquidy. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We got weights and fish.
We got weights and fish.
There we go. Oh!
Back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5. The show name is a reference to how many great Astros' last name begin with the letter B who were playing back in the 90s when they were not winning World Series. Bagwell, Biggio, Berry, Bell, and eventually Bergman. You might not remember Berry and Bell, but trust me, you'll remember Blank and Brenham. Here they are now, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
We have a poster now as well. I think it says the B Brothers, mm-hmm. and they just have a picture. It's basically our heads on Bagwell and Biggio, but they put me on Bagwell's body and they put you on Biggio's body, which is true. I mean, I'm jacked. You, on the other hand, built a little bit more like a second baseman.
Craig was also. Yeah, you know,
thanks to JBarM for bringing in some lunch today. Hoffy, who's my dude.
He's a big dude.
Hoffy's my dude, and he's a giant dude.
Yes.
I want him on my team. Why do you think I'm so chummy with Hoffy?
Why is he it's your dude?
We just hit it off whenever I went out to JBarM that one time. And I think we kind of live in the same area. But okay. Cool dude. But he brought us, JBarM brought us some food today, which and some drink, because it is a hot bee summer. They brought us the Capricious Tendencies, which is the featured drink, which Joe George already had three. It's a strawberry coconut bourbon cocktail, which is fantastic. It is really good. It's fantastic. They also brought in some beef brisket, which is great. We were having the brisket debate. Do you go lean? Do you go fat? Lean moist, sometimes they call it. I'm a moist guy. I like it. I like my meat, my brisket with a little bit of fat on it.
I went to the Bird Ends because I like it well done, as you know. And mm-hmm. then I went to more of the drier side. But boy, that brisket was. Whew.
I like the moist better than the lean. But they also brought in some jalapeno cheddar sausage, which is great. Yep. House made potato salad, which you were quick to point out that they have some nice boiled eggs in them,
yep.
which is always key to a good potato salad. And don't sleep on the green beans with bacon.
Those good.
They're so good.
Yeah.
They are so good. So make sure that you stop by JBarM. We're going to have our street team out there on Friday, by the way. No one likes to work on Friday in the summer anyways. So swing on by JBarM Barbecue and Smokehouse right there in Edo, 2201 Leland Street. A great spot to hang out. Parking there as well. It's always hard to park in Edo downtown. They have a full parking lot, the full menu, the drinks. It is all very, very good. World-class barbecue, wood-fired steaks every day but Monday as well. So get your hands on some of that. And the Smokehouse Social Hour from 4 to 7. Stop
Pretty
by
JBarM. Last time they were here, too, and they explained the process and
it's a
all
great
the smokers
too.
And all the different things they have in the kitchen. It's fantastic.
Oh, it's so good. I will... there's a lot of like people that bring us food and that we have to say like nice things about. I would vouch for JBarM. In fact, so much that I'm wearing their hat, but it is very good. Very, very good. You're right, Ocho. All right, so this sounds like a crazy, crazy thought, and I hesitate to even say it because I saw what happened to Jeremy Booth on Twitter whenever he said some things that maybe he shouldn't have said. Did you see that? Like, he is blocking everybody on Twitter right now, Jeremy Booth.
Or he's challenging them to meet him on the concourse.
He wants to fight AC.
Minute Maid.
He wants to fight AC.
I'd like to see that happen.
Where's Joe George when we need him?
Really,
like,
seriously.
He's like the analyst of that. But, yeah. Don't say things that you are going to block. Here's my take on Jeremy Booth real quick.
Yep.
I don't mind what he said. I think he kind of went overboard. I think he's kind of silly about it. I don't hate what he said. I disagree. But, like, okay, own it, though. Like, if you're going to have that strong of a take, own the take. Stop blocking people because they disagree with you and are coming at you. If you're going to make a strong stance, own the strong stance. Stop blocking people on Twitter.
This is the thing, and Joe, thanks, because we were looking for you.
Yeah, we went to some AC analysis, and you were gone.
The thing is the same way when we say that people don't agree with our opinions. I mean, every day we give you 100, in a week we give you 200, 300 opinions. You're not going to agree with all of them, but that creates a discussion and dialogue. But what it shouldn't create is hard feelings and you know, you either want to lash out and start getting into name-calling things, or you want to block people. Like, if you're going to own the take or own the side of a debate, just fight for your side.
Yeah.
Provide evidence. You know, explain why you feel the way you do. But the fact that you're going to come out there, it's almost like what you're picking apart is exactly what you're doing. Because if you pick them apart for putting the tweet out there, if you're the Astros, and then taking it down, But then you go.
It's a great point.
And then you
go.
Great
point.
And you have an opinion, but then if they don't agree with you, you're blocking them.
Yeah, I think that was soft. Like, if you're going to have a strong stance, cool. Like, I don't care at all if you have a strong stance. Like, I've had a few strong stances that I've been terribly wrong about. But I'm not going to go block people because they point out that I'm wrong. That's so soft, I thought. Joe George, you want to chime in at all on this whole little
this Jeremy is about Booth? That. Yeah. Who is this guy?
Jeremy Booth. He's like a former scout who's the Channel 11 baseball analyst.
That's weird. I've never heard of him. So he's,
have you not?
No, I literally, until he made this tweet and made a big deal, I literally had no idea who this
guy
was.
He's always been kind of anti-Astro. Like, I remember he was blasting a Luno draft one year. So
I think New Balance has a baseball team or something like that, like a baseball,
like a select team.
No, like a board of people that for, I don't know if they do camps or whatever, but someone said he was a former player. I don't know how far he got or where he played, but I know him most for being the baseball analyst for World Series and playoff time for Channel 11.
Yeah, that's where I know him from.
Yeah. And we had him on the show once or twice.
Oh, I think we did.
Yeah.
That's right. We had him on the show once or twice. We did have him. Bronco says that AC was ready to box in his bedazzled jeans. That's not nice. We're not going to read that stuff on the air. 713-780-ESP at HRMP listener line. 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Anyways, a long way to get to the point I was making about what sounds crazy, but it's actually true. The Houston Astros have improved since the injuries of Luis Garcia and Jose Urquidy. Those two pitchers going out have made the Astros better because Belak and France have pitched better than Garcia and Urquidy in 2023. It's not an opinion. It's a fact. Jose Urquidy's ERA when he got hurt, 5.20. Luis Garcia's ERA when he got hurt. Now, he was pitching well. Like, Luis Garcia was starting to click. That's what stinks about the Luis Garcia thing is he was starting to click where it's like, man, the Astros have a formidable 1-2-3-4 because Garcia was starting to click. But Urquidy 5.20, Garcia a 4 ERA when they got hurt. Brandon Belak's at 3.60, is at 3.19, and J.P. France is at 4. So, like, France and Garcia's ERA wash each other out. Brandon Belak at a 3.19, Urquidy to 5.20. The Astros' rotation has gotten better since the injuries of Garcia, Urquidy, and the addition of Belak and France.
The pushback I was going to say is Garcia started finding it. Garcia started to look really good until he got hurt, and that was the kind of jolt that you were looking at from the rotational standpoint, thinking, well, God, now we get a McCullers back. You got Garcia pitching as well as he's pitching. You got Hunter Brown looking like he's going to be perfect from the get-go to be a rotational guy. And you're feeling really, really good about the rotation. Now, it's in a different way, and I was kind of jumping off the Belak bandwagon yesterday. But it was impressive what he went out and did yesterday. You know, he takes his lumps. He gives up some hits. But even yesterday, he didn't give up any hits. He just kind of found a groove and kept doing what he needed to do. And gets the job done.
Yesterday.
Yeah, and I mean, what did he give up his first hit in
I think it was the fifth. Carried a no-hitter into
it was
fifth.
Late, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a double down in the corner, I think. But overall, if he's doing something like that, because I believe that France definitely has the stuff, he's got a little faster fastball. But when you think about what could have been, again, when you start talking about if you got the other two guys back and you know you're not getting Garcia back, now you're so deep that your bullpen, and it gets way better in the playoffs. Yeah. And the rest of the season, you have so many different options. If you want to go six-man, if you want to even split starts, you want to do things to get creative and take some innings off some guys, you could do all those things. The other thing your point that makes this very important is, I know it's not just me, and I had some people push back a little bit.
It might just be you.
But when Berman put out the video yesterday of Urquidy throwing, I was like, you know what? You might be right. These two guys that are in the rotation now are more valuable than anybody might see for the big picture.
Yeah, the video of Urquidy pitching was kind of weird. But look, don't Jeremy Booth me. Like, I'm not saying that I want Urquidy and Luis Garcia to be hurt. And you're right. Like, Garcia was starting to
shove. He was dealing. Yeah.
Like, I was like, man, okay, I'm bullish on Luis Garcia again. But the Astros' production with the five starts of France and Belak have been better than the production that you were getting from Luis Garcia, Jose Urquidy. Obviously, you wish injury on nobody. But I think that the bigger take is actually this. I think that the Astros have a secret weapon when you look at the brilliance of what they have in pitching resources. The co-pitching coaches with Josh Miller, mm-hmm. with Bill Murphy. You want to throw Martin Maldonado in the mix? I'm willing to allow you to throw Martin Maldonado in the mix. Brandon Belak has pitched in four seasons in AAA. His career ERA in AAA, four seasons, is 3.66. He's pitching it to a 3.19 ERA right now. J.P. France, four seasons in AAA, 3.64 ERA. He's pitching to a 4 ERA in the major leagues. the bigger take is not so much Belak. It's not so much J.P. France. It's not even Urquidy Garcia thrown into the mix. The Astros have a secret weapon with Josh Miller, with Bill Murphy, maybe Martin Maldonado, with how they develop their pitchers. And it's usually pretty simple. Hey, you throw this pitch poorly, stop throwing that pitch. It's sequencing. We saw Belak all of a sudden go with the sinker changeup yesterday. When Verlander came, they're like, hey, stop throwing the two-seam fastball. And then he's a Hall of Famer again. It's not rocket science, but the way that the Astros get the most out of their pitchers, it's kind of the conversation we were having yesterday with the Miami Heat getting the most out of their players. The Astros just find a way, no matter who's on the mound, to maximize that guy.
Yeah, no, look, I agree with you, but and I think before this was the same kind of conversations we were talking about when we were talking about Brent Strom. We were talking about a secret weapon. We were talking about a guy that untapped, you know, everything that these pitchers that came in as raw or unfinished, and he was the guy to get it out of them. Well, evidently the law firm learned quite a bit when they were looking and hanging around with Stromy, because they've picked up where he left off, and they're getting the most out of their pitching staff. I think the other thing that goes back to even the trade deadline with James Click a year ago and talking about how he and Dusty had talked about insurance policies. Without even knowing it, what you really have now is insurance policies across the board, because now your pen is deeper because of the fact that you have an excess of guys that throw plus fastballs that can get guys out. So we saw Stanek last night. We can see him make appearances sometimes to spell a Presley, to spell a Abreu. Montero, you could move around. We saw him slide down a little bit back closer to the sixth inning. Now we've seen him kind of start begin bump back up. But the fact is, you have insurance policies. If a guy goes down, you've got other guys that can pick up. In the rotation now, you know you can go to that six-man rotation. You can expand it if you have to because you've got five solid guys. You're trying to figure out if Blanco's going to be the sixth, because we talked about yesterday, there was a possibility that it might have been the first time that we might see Whitley. But you know that going in, depending on what you want to do, you've got five solid starters that are going to keep you in ball games.
Yeah, and they have pitching coaches that maximize 4A players. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Let's talk about the ump show last night. The ump show at Minute Maid Park. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, the best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. If you don't know what it is, you need to figure it out, especially if you've got thinning hair or bald spots and you think there's nothing you can do about it. Doc Linville has something you absolutely can do about it, and he wants more people to know about it because he thinks it's an untapped resource for guys to get their hair back. You can get your hairline back in front. You can fill that bald spot on the top. And simply put, it's your own hair being put where you need it most. Genetically, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head. That's why you see guys that have that kind of wreath that goes around the sides. They might be bald on top, but you're always going to have that hair on the sides and back. And what Doc does is he takes some of that and puts it where you need it most. It's an unbelievable procedure. For me, it was really painless. And the fact of the matter is 95%+ of the follicles moved are going to stay and grow and be with you for the long haul. It's fantastic. You feel more self-confident. You look in the mirror, you see the results almost instantaneously, and you know that hair is getting stronger and longer. And with every day that passes, it looks better and better on your head. It's an unbelievable deal, and it's even better for ESPN listeners because you get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff. It normally costs $150, but because you listen to the station, all you got to do is go to 975hair.com, set up an appointment. It's free. Ask questions. Get answers. There's no obligation. And find out if you're the next in line that can benefit from the NeoGraft procedure. Lots of listeners are getting involved, and they're seeing results too. Be the next to join me and John Granato and so many more that can't say enough good things about the NeoGraft and Doc Linville. Check them out today, 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5, the only Houston sports station with a bidet.
The bidet, there's a sturdiness to it. It can accommodate a fairly heavy carriage.
Welcome back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5. Killer bees are also known as Africanized bees. And we all know there's nothing Africanized about these two guys. It's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Forgot to look for my 23andMe. I'm going to have to go look for that. All right, the ump show yesterday was in play. Jerry Lane was the home plate umpire yesterday, and Dusty was asked about this after the game, and Dusty gave a great answer. He's like, well, new school, you don't see it anymore, but old school, you did, and he's kind of an old school umpire. He gave, like, this really great, long-winded nothing burger, but it was a fun answer after Chandler Rome asked him. Some people hate Chandler Room. But anyways, what'd you make of the ump show, Jerry Lane, yesterday, especially getting in the face of Jeremy Payne?
It was unnecessary. And I think that, again, kind of like some of the other things we've been talking about today, if you're going to start it by doing what he did. Now, granted, Pena had a problem with a call that was outside.
It was outside.
And he rang up Altuve on a call that was not a strike. And Blummer and TK, who try to refrain from talking about it, were saying there was a 22, 24-inch plate last night because he was all over the map, and a lot of them were against the Astros. Well, if right after you ring up Altuve like that, you call that pitch on Pena, and Pena is not a rookie anymore, and he's, you know, feel free to speak your mind a little bit, but he basically said, no, that ball was outside. And then all of a sudden, Jerry had a whole bunch to say. If you're going to do that, then you can't get sensitive and start tossing guys out when they come back at you. Because the same way, what, to Dusty's point about how it used to be that way, where you could challenge an umpire and you could go back, you could get in his face a little bit and say he missed that and that was bad, and be a little bit more demonstrative. There's a whole changing of the guard where the unwritten rule now is, you're nice, you're polite, you don't challenge anything, you barely say a word, and if you do, you make sure it's not demonstrative where anybody knows you're saying it. The fact that he went out and did what he did opened the whole door to say anybody should be able to say whatever they want back because you want that smoke. You're going at the hitter.
Yeah, see, I don't even have a problem with Lane strike zone. Like, and I know a lot of people do, but like I'm old school in the sense of like I don't mind a zone that has its own personality. Like I don't mind when an umpire has a very specific zone for them where it's a pitcher zone, they're given the river, which is the space in between the batter's box and the plate. I don't mind that stuff. I really don't. Like I'm old school to where pitchers should adjust, hitters should adjust, and you learn the strike zone. So like people were crushing Lane's strike zone. Get it. He was missing plates that were in the K zone or pitches that were in the K zone. The problem that I had was going after Pena. Like, you want to have a strike zone that's big, that's a pitcher zone? Okay, cool. We don't have robo umpires yet. We don't have a robo zone. You still have the personality of your strike zone. But whenever you have a big zone, you have to understand that that's going to come with some scrutiny. It's going to come from some heat from the dugout. And, like, I'm okay with him throwing out Cintron. Like, hey, he's yelling from the dugout. He's a co-hitting coach. He's not the manager. Cool. Throw him out. The problem I have is whenever you get face-to-face with a hitter. Like, umpires aren't supposed to instigate argument, and Jerry Lane yesterday instigated argument. I can live with the strike zone. I can live with the ejection. In no way ever should an umpire be walking up to a player and getting in his face because they said that bubble's outside.
Now, I don't want to sound like a homer because I hate the people that go over the top on criticizing the strike zone and are egregious about ripping the umpires.
Same.
But when you look at it last night, and then you go deeper in the game, and you see that Minnesota was getting those calls, those same calls, mm-hmm. on the edges, on the black, the high and tight and the high outside corners, they were getting in almost the exact same spots. The Houston pitchers were struggling to get those calls. That's where I get frustrated, because I agree with you. Like, every home plate umpire has his own zone. And you know there's scouting reports that everybody knows, hey, so-and-so's behind the dish today. You know he's got a low zone. He calls the low one. He gives you a little bit of a break on the high one or vice versa. But the fact that as long as you keep it consistent for both sides, now everybody in the game knows this is the zone today.
I'm cool with that.
But what I saw last night was inconsistency.
I saw a little bit of that too.
And that's fair. Bothered me. That bothered me a great deal. Because now Altuve's the kind of guy that it takes a whole lot for him to challenge anything. And normally he walks way around to go to the dugout. He went between the catcher and the umpire to make sure that he dropped a few choice words to say. And he said, no. That was not a strike.
Oh, it was. It wasn't. It wasn't in terms of the, like, what we consider the strike zone. Right. But, like, we're still living in an era, and, like, the boxes are the worst things that's happened to umpires. We still live in an era where these umpires have their own strike zone. Mm-hmm. So, it was not a strike with the K zone, but it's a strike for Jerry Lane. Like, but you're right. There was inconsistency. Like, I don't disagree with that at all.
But it's also, like, the frustration, like, back in the Braves days. It's one thing to say that Maddux got those calls from an umpire.
Yeah, he didn't get the river. He got the other batter
right,
box.
Right, but the thing is, you would expect it. Most teams were really upset because it wasn't going both ways. Like, if my starting pitcher, whether he was a future Hall of Famer or not, if my starting pitcher's getting the same calls Maddux is getting, cool. Then we know what the zone is, and we can prepare for it. Mm-hmm. But if we're not getting the same calls as the other guy, now it's a real issue. That's why for all the things that I think is just more fodder for Twitter and for people to bitch about when it comes to the strike zone accuracy and the umpire website and all that other stuff. The one thing that I do like is the fact it can tell you how it can alter runs per game and how it can affect either team if one team's getting a lot more of them than the other team.
Yeah. Ocho says, what about Blum saying the manager should have stepped in? Was that a shot at Dusty? Yeah, it probably was a little bit of a shot at Dusty because, yeah, there should have been. I don't care where it comes from. I don't care if it's Cintron. I don't care if it's Dusty. Dusty's never been one to get thrown out of games. I think he averages one a year. Like, he just doesn't get ejected. I'm cool if it's the dugout standing up for the player. I don't think it has to be the manager standing up for the player. But if Blum said that, I think it was probably a little bit of a shot, yeah.
I think that he's at least pointing out that, again, how baseball works, the same way we had this conversation about how big of a deal it became that Abreu got dotted after he did what he did after hitting a home run, and was it, you know, part of the unwritten rules of baseball or not? And Dusty had comments on that. Well, when we see what baseball normally is about, if the umpire is going to go and do something like that that is so demonstrative that everybody notices it, you don't have to be Aaron Boone and get thrown out. But you saw it in Tampa Bay. You saw it in Minnesota with Baldelli. You've seen it with these episodes with the Yankees and with umpires and with other things where an umpire's got to stick up for, a manager's got to stick up for his team. You don't have to necessarily get tossed, but you got to go out there and say, hey, Jerry, guess what, man? I'm not here. I'm not trying to get tossed, but what I'm trying to tell you is you can't do what you just did and expect my guys to sit on their hands and stifle their vocal cords because it's not going to work.
What I saw yesterday as well was, like, I think that whenever that happens in games, it brings up the RoboZone. I have, for a long time, been against the RoboZone. I like personal strike zones. I'm okay with a pitcher zone. I'm okay with a little bit of a floating zone from umpire to umpire. I've gotten to the point now, though, where people complain about it so much that I'm totally fine with a RoboZone, just to eliminate people complaining. Not that I care that they're missing calls, things like that, but I'm just sick of the complaints. The one thing that I do hate, though, is the whole challenge thing.
I was just going to say, that's going to slow the game down
like,
again.
If you either need to go all in with RoboZone and every single pitch is based on the RoboZone, or you can't do it at all. Because what you're going to have, and this is going to be a problem, and I'm telling you it's going to be a problem, is that you're going to have, last night, Jerry Lane. Jerry Lane's going to have a big strike zone. But then all of a sudden, I don't even know how many challenges you would get a game. Let's say three to five challenges a game. And then all of a sudden, for those three to five pitches, it's going to have an entirely different zone than what has been established the whole game. So if you're gonna implement the RoboZone, okay, whatever, I don't care that much. You either do it all the way or you don't do it at all. You don't do this half measure, three challenges, because in those three moments in the entire game, that strike zone is going to be entirely different than the strike zone that's been established for every other pitch in the entire nine innings.
Yeah, no, look, I think that the thing that came to mind when they were mentioning how it might work and with these challenges is, well, you did all this to try and speed up the game. But every time you're going to go through a challenge process on whether the batter wants it or the pitcher wants it or the catcher wants it, you're going to slow the game back down again.
It's going to slow it down, but also like that for those three to five pitches, the zone's going to be different than what it had been.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a problem to me.
And so I don't like the fact that you're going to have the zone and you're still going to have an umpire behind the plate. And then you're going to have three challenges, or like you said, or however many challenges you get. I think it's going to slow the game down. I think it's going to get too nitpicky, and you're going to have too many guys worried about too many things. And then you're going to have to worry about, when do I challenge that? But if you don't challenge it, what's going to change until you get to a bigger moment in the game? And maybe you don't get to a bigger moment in the game when you want to challenge it. But I just think that's good. I think that's too much. I think that's screwing with the game a little too much when part of being enjoying baseball, what baseball's been for its existence, yeah, is the human element of an umpire and his strike zone.
I'm pro just keeping the zone the way it is. But if you're going to all of a sudden do it at all, you need to do it all the way, because it's what you talked about. You said you like consistency of a strike zone. So we're going to have consistency of a strike zone with RoboZone, or with regular umpires. Like, if Jerry Lane was behind the plate next year and you have the RoboZone challenge, you have a big strike zone the entire game. And for the three to five challenges that you have in a game, all of a sudden that strike zone becomes inconsistent. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, it doesn't make any sense. You do it none at all, or not at all, or you do it all the way.
And as a pitcher, that's all you can ask for, because you're going to be communicating with your catcher. You're going to be communicating with hitters. And one of the things that you're always going to say is, hey, a hitter's going to come back, or the catcher's going to come back and say, hey, look, he's giving you, or he's opening up the lower part of the zone, or low inside now seems to be something that he's calling. So now you keep that in the back of your mind and use that as a weapon in your arsenal that you might want to go there if you need to get a pitch or you got to make sure a ball doesn't get hit hard and you might get a strike out of it.
Yeah.
Those are the things you're not going to have with the RoboZone.
Yep. I'm okay with RoboZone, but you got to do it all the way if you're going to do it at all. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. How do you feel about RoboZone? You can weigh in on this. 713-780-3776, the HRP listener line. We'll spend a few minutes on that. Also, Robert Horry has his top three big men that he's ever played with. He's played with Dream. He's played with Shaq. He's played with Duncan. How does he order them? How do we order them? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now, with more nougat.
You know, cooking.
Pork chop sandwiches.
Welcome back to the Killer Bees Nuts, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and that Jeremy Branham guy.
Oh, Spencer. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. John wants to get it on the RoboZone. John, we're nerds. John, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. What's up?
Yeah, I'm not happy about the RoboZone of any kind, but as far as the aspect of time, they already said it would be game stuff. It would be like within 15 seconds, it would be yes or no, strike or not. But it would be displayed on the big board, and everybody in the stands would see it. Everybody would see it. You don't have to go. It's not going to sound like the NFL. And as far as like those three times of the game day, it's called differently. Yeah. You already have that in the NFL and NBA. Because one of the stupidest, most idiotic things I hear fans say is like at the end of the game, you got to let them play. That is a foul in the first minute is the same as a foul in the last minute. I don't care what anybody says. That's the dumbest crap I've ever heard. If it's a foul, you call it anytime. So, you know, referees already do that. They swallow the whistle in certain times of the game. So that already takes place. That's all. It's always been a part of sports. So
appreciate the call,
John. That already goes on. Oh.
Appreciate the call, John. I want to have a bourbon with John. He sounds like my kind of guy. He sounds like a hardo. I like him.
After you crushed, you kind of dropped the guillotine on his last comment.
I thought he was done. Yeah, it's my bad, John. We'll have two bourbons on me.
There you go.
So this would be more like the tennis, like Total Dallas is talking about it too. Like it would be kind of instantaneous. We're like, okay, it pops up real quick. Because if like we can watch it as viewers and it's that quick, then it's going to be the same way for Major League Baseball. So time shouldn't be an issue. To me, it's more, and look, I agree with John's points that like fouls in the first minute should be the same as fouls in the last minute. Totally agree with everything that he had to say. I want either all of the RoboZone or I don't want any of the RoboZone. I don't like the whole challenge process because right now a strike zone is subjective to that home plate umpire. And he's going to call every single pitch based on his subjective strike zone. And then all of a sudden, we're going to go to an objective robo zone for 3 to 5 times a game. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. So it's either all the way or you don't do it at all. Stop with this whole little challenge system that they're testing in the minor leagues. If you're going to do it, go 100% do it. But no in-between stuff. I hate that.
It's going to muck it up. It really is.
It's going to be different zones for five pitches.
It's not just screwing up the flow, but it's going to muck it up for both sides and all the pitchers. And everyone involved, and you're right, it's a valid point.
Jerry Lane yesterday was calling pitches, I mean, more times than not, 2-3 inches off the outside corner. So he's going to call that zone every single time, for the most part, and then all of a sudden Pena is going to challenge it one time. You're like, oh, nope, that's not a strike. But then every other time after that, it's still going to be a strike. It makes no sense.
I will say this, though. The other thing that you're going to find is the fact that just like you, people say, well, you know, it's part of the human element. Part of the human element, too, is the element to get pissed off. And if you get pissed off, you get a home plate umpire that says, well, if you're going to start challenging me, then I'm going to start, you know, whether it's subconsciously or not, I'm going to start calling a little bit tighter or a little bit, you know, whichever way to go against you if you're coming at me, if you or your squad are coming at me. So if Cintron gets kicked out, Pena's the guy that starts challenging. I'm not hearing any chirping from Minnesota. Well, then if there's a borderline call and it's close, human nature says he's probably going to call it a strike if it's going against the Astros.
4995, why doesn't Major League Baseball do anything about the umpires? For somebody who has spent every year since 2008 in college baseball, watching at least 50 college baseball games a year since 2008, these are the best umpires in the world. Like, they really are. These are the very, very best. If you don't think so, go watch a weekend series of college baseball because these are the best umpires.
Well, the strike zones are ridiculous in college.
I've seen Major League Baseball umpires, I've seen college baseball umpires, I've seen minor league umpires. These are, as much as you get mad at them, as many calls as they make, as many ump shows as you see, these are the very best in the world.
Well, and our experiences are with different sports, too. But I used to have to go to referee camp every year and sit in a room with all the NBA officials and go over video and have all the broadcasters from all the teams be basically put on blast to look like idiots because you think you know what a foul is or what travel. Now, I agree with the caller to the point of you can't swallow the whistle in the final 5 seconds or in the final minute. You still, a foul is a foul and a violation is a violation no matter when it occurs. But again, referees and umpires are going to take certain things into consideration, just like you're not going to kick a superstar out if he's already got one technical in the middle of a playoff game, because it's going to take away from a lot of different things with the game, with the fan base, with the interest, with the TV. They're just not going to do that. But in terms of violations and or fouls, you're supposed to call what you see. But it is such a quick, high, it's such a fast-paced game, even in baseball, with how fast the ball is being pitched and everything that goes on with the catcher trying to frame it. You got to see it before the catcher tries to frame it. They are the best in the business in every league across the board, NFL, MLB, NBA. It's just that it's the easiest thing for us to point to as fans because we're not in the moment with all the elements as quick as it's happening in real time.
I want Ben DeBose to be behind the plate for one Major League Baseball game. That would be so good. I would pay a lot of money.
What do you think his accuracy percentage would be?
80%.
I'm about 75%.
You think he's 75? 80? Yeah. It's not 80%. That's not that bad. 80% is pretty bad.
Wait, don't you think he's closing his eyes for half the pitches?
I think Major League Baseball, yeah. Oh, no doubt. Yeah. He's not going to see anything. I think Major League Baseball average is like 95. Like 80% of the strikes is pretty poor.
The average?
Yeah, I'm saying I think that's too low or too
for
high.
For Ben DeBose?
Too high.
You think it's, what do you think it's at?
Like 40?
No, he's not going to miss. He's not going to miss 60% of balls.
He can't use his
strikes.
Eyes normally when he's watching TV. He complains all the time about everything that's on television. He's not going to get it right when he's behind the plate.
Not everything he's on not television. Miss 60, just every team playing a Houston team and every officiating crew or umpiring crew.
I like Ben. But like he
I
just
like Ben too.
He is just like relentlessly just bitches about umping and reffing. It's like the only gimmick he's got.
He does lean into the gimmick, though. He's like a method actor when it comes to that. 40% is a lot. Junior Bronco says, would be weird to see a home plate umpire crying. I think that's towards Ben. Don't put that stuff on Twitch. That's not nice. We're not going to read that stuff on the air. 713-780-ESPN. HRMP. 713-780-3776. Poncho talks about the biases, unsafe tendencies, and access to grind. You would eliminate that with the RoboZone? You can't.
It's a big deal. It's real.
Yeah, it is real. I completely agree.
And I told you, like, when I was with the Rockets, they charted every official, and between the coaching staff, and as it related to with my last coach with McHale, he knew the three referees, and when they gave him a heads up, hey, you're going to get so-and-so tonight. He was like, we're already behind the eight ball because there was an axe to grind. There was a grudge that was going to carry over. We know the Chris Paul Scott Foster thing. Yeah, Tony Brothers had a big problem with Yao Ming. He got caught for it and penalized for it because he made some comments once about it. But overall, we knew if we had Tony Brothers in a game with Yao, we were not going to get calls in the post. It's just a fact. That's part of the human nature element that I think that probably the leagues are trying to take out of it by doing the robo in baseball. Then, but I don't know if they're not looking at the big picture enough.
Then go all the way. Like, go all the way if you're going to do it. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Jose, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Jose?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Look up. I got a little bit of insight of that, man. I've been a big catching guru for years now, and you know, I've had a bunch of students, a bunch of kids that are catchers, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with Carlos. Carlos Munoz used to be a catcher with the Houston Astros. Mm-hmm. So, the thing that I hate about Robo Hump is that you're basically going to take away a skill that's been actually trained into catchers. You know, and we're talking about hours and countless hours on learning how to frame pitches. And kind of like to the point that you said, I like to get some people behind the plate and just stand there and watch. I mean, and I'm not even talking college level. Stand behind the plate at a high school game and just watch kids throwing 85, 86 and see the break of the ball, and then you tell me if it's a strike or a ball. Because these kids, again, you know, the game has changed a lot. You know, the framing has come a long way. And on the same point, you actually have kids that don't know how to frame. You're actually stealing strikes the opposite way.
Yeah.
So you're losing strikes because somebody doesn't know how to frame a pitch. Now, are you going to challenge that as well? You know, and we watched Martin Maldonado do it as well, where it's low and it looks like it's a strike, but because he was set up on the inside, he reached across his body, Blue doesn't call it, all of a sudden, you know, again, is that something that we're going to be able to challenge, or is everybody going to be okay with watching Martín Maldonado reach all the way across his body?
Yep.
You know, damn near pick the ball off the ground, and everybody's going to, it's going to be a strike, and we're going to be okay with that.
Good. It's a good point, Jose, because, like, you're right. Like, if you do go... Here's the other part of this. Like, if you go 100% RoboZone, you are totally eliminating that skill. You're totally eliminating framing from baseball. 100% true. And he talked about stealing pitches, you know, balls into strikes and even strikes into balls. Bad receivers turn strikes into balls all the time. You see it all the time, especially with young catchers, especially Yonder Diaz.
I was going to say the same thing.
So it definitely is. It is a skill. Now, if you go to the challenge method, it doesn't totally eliminate it. It only eliminates it by, like, I don't know, 25%, depending on which challenge, how many challenges you get. So it's kind of partially taking it, but not all the way. But that is kind of the casualty of a RoboZone, is you are taking away at least some of the framing skill that catchers have.
There's no doubt. And I thought about Diaz and the fact that he'd fallen out of favor with Dusty, mm-hmm. and Salazar is catching more, because I think that's part of the element that I think Dusty thinks is missing, that his pitchers really like and need. When you've got Maldi behind the plate, or I guess Salazar to some degree, but Maldi's the guy that we know, the same way Correa gets value for mound visits. Maldi gets a ton of credit, not only as the team psychologist for pitchers, but the way he frames and calls a game.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. All right, let's get to the conversation. Robert Horry on the Steven Jackson, Matt Barnes podcast, talking about which of the big men was the greatest he's ever played with. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Everyone loves our chicken pot pie.
Chicken pot, chicken pot, chicken pot pie.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.